Thank you and good morning. On the 25th of May, a fire occurred outside Witt in a hog confinement owned by Phil Bork. The fire started about 4 a.m. that morning until fire staff arrived to put out the flames. I caught up with Phil about the fire, how the sows that survived are doing, and the plans to rebuild.
I'm here with Phil Bork of Bork Farms. Phil has recently suffered a barn fire in his hog confinement near Witt. Phil, from all of us here at WSMI, we are truly saddened to hear about the fire at your facility. Has there been any indication of how the fire started?
No, we still, we had engineers there yesterday and electrical engineer will be coming in next week.
Do you have a final number of hogs lost?
No, and it's only been a week. Here it is 7 days later, and Forge Farms is back to raising pigs. We had pigs being born the very next day, and we're having buildings repaired, and we're moving forward and looking forward to the future. The thing we'd like to do is make sure that we thank the overwhelming support that we had from the community, the first responders, from our neighbors, from our friends and family that came to our needs on Friday morning, and it's just been overwhelming the amount of support that we've had.
That's truly a sentiment to the ag industry, I feel, that, you know, whenever one of us falls down, there's always the rest of us there to catch them. So that's great that you guys had so much help on Friday. Was it a lot of cleanup on Friday then?
With very little cleanup got done on Friday. The focus Friday was to move the girls that did not have ventilation and water to another one of our farms that worked with us. The Weedy Camp family in Raymond Farmersville jumped in and made room for the for sows that need to move that day. And then it's amazing actually how many sows we were able to save underneath the rubble, and we were actually moving live sows out on Saturday that we had no idea that had survived the fire at that point.
How many sows did survive?
The vast majority of the sows on the farm survived. One of the barns that burned was actually empty, and so the main loss was all of our farrowing at that point burnt, but we was able then to move some girls then to a new farrowing facility that was right beside it that survived this fire because of a concrete bunker in between the two, and that stopped the fire from continuing into it.
Well, that's really, you know, that's pretty amazing that those sows even survived. I worked for the mash-offs, and I can't imagine those pigs, you know, underneath all that rubble and the fairly ventilated buildings anyway, but that's pretty amazing. Are any of the remaining hogs suffering any health repercussions due to the fire?
Standing operating procedures that we did not have in place, but others jumped in response to is we actually had two veterinarians on site before noon on Friday. Another veterinarian came later in the day, and then our personal vet then came on Saturday then, and their primary focus was in the health and welfare of the pigs throughout the whole farm, and they was getting into the rubble with the firemen and caring for the sows that were there and making the judgment call of can, you know, does that sow need to be euthanized or not. And so the veterinarians were great in helping us get that task done while we were trying to save and take care of the majority of the animals. They were taking care of the individuals.
Yeah, that's really interesting. That's a good thing those vets were on call and able to help, and I'm sure they dropped everything to get out there. You said that you guys had plans to rebuild and they're looking towards the future. Have you started rebuilding yet? I know it's only been a week, so you've probably been dealing, like you said, with the individual animals more, but are there set plans to rebuild anytime soon?
We've already setting trusses today on one of the barns that was partially damaged. So we've been working all week at preparing to bring in new materials. We look to have one of the barns up and running within 3 weeks of the fire, so we can move those girls back home. But it will be a long process to repair the farm, and we're really looking at probably a year's process before we have some semblance of being normal.
Well, again, Phil, we're sorry to hear about the loss you suffered, but we know you'll be back on your feet in no time. It sounds like you guys are already pretty much back on your feet, getting things started again. Thank you for sharing with us here at WSMI, and I look forward to talking to you again in the future.
I just, again, want to thank everyone that came to our needs, and it's overwhelming, and it's great to be part of a small community, and we had ag and non-ag people reaching out and helping, and it's very just an awesome response, and myself and my family thank everyone.
Thank you to all those that joined in the efforts to help and truly show what it means to live in a small rural community. We wish the best of luck to the Borix as they rebuild. The National Farmers Union says family farmers are likely the first casualty if Trump administration provokes global trade war. In a move that has already provoked retaliatory measures, the Trump administration announced May 31st its intention to impose a 25% tariff on steel and a 10% tariff on aluminum imports from the European Union, Canada, and Mexico. National Farmers Union, a grassroots, producer-driven organization, has long advocated fair and transparent trade policies that reduce the U.S. trade deficit and support family farmers and ranchers. In response to the announcement, National Farmers Union President Roger Johnson released the following statement. Unfettered free trade has characterized U.S. trade relationships for many decades, often at substantial cost to our farmers and ranchers and our nation's economy. Though we agree with President Trump's inclination to address unfair trading practices and reduce our trade deficit, provoking a global trade war with our closest allies hardly seems like the solution. Indeed, these on-again, off-again tariffs will likely result in the opposite of their intended effects. Agriculture is always the first casualty of retaliatory tariffs, and it is no different in this instance. All targeted countries have already announced that they will levy taxes on a number of U.S. agricultural products, which could have widespread negative consequences for family farmers and ranchers. Family farmers and ranchers are already experiencing several depressed farm prices and a 12-year low in farm income. They cannot afford to serve as collateral in a trade war. We again urge President Trump and his administration work with Congress to immediately put a plan in place to protect farmers, ranchers, and rural communities from retaliatory actions. Again, that was a quote from National Farmers Union President Roger Johnson. Agriculture is pressing for immigration reform. Agriculture is in the midst of a labor crisis that's only getting worse. Ag groups have been pushing Congress to fix the immigration system for the last two decades. Paul Schiegel, AFBF, Managing Director of Public Policy and Economics, says it's past time for Congress to get the immigration system overhauled. He says one of the first things to decide is how to grant legal status to the workforce that's already in the country.
We are now dependent to a large degree on hundreds of thousands of workers who would like to get legal status, and we want to get them legal status. So stabilization of our existing workforce is a principal element that has to be addressed. And for the future, we have to have a guest worker program that embraces all of agriculture, that's affordable, that is not bureaucratic, that gets employers workers when they need them.
The House of Representatives is due to consider an immigration bill sponsored by Republican Bob Goodlatte of Virginia. Schiegel says the bill improves the Great Worker Program, but Farm Bureau is also paying close attention to other aspects of the bill.
It's an affordable program. It moves it to the Department of Agriculture. It's less expensive for growers. So there are very, very many ways that guest worker program is positive. The other aspect, our short-term issue on stabilization of the existing workforce, the bill falls short. And we have been in ongoing discussions with the chairman and the staff. It's not, frankly, where we would like it to be at the moment. But we certainly want to make sure that if the House passes any kind of legislation, they have something on agriculture.
With growing concerns about immigration and its connection to the House Farm Bill's passage, Schiegel says the House will take action soon. He says Farm Bureau's main concern is that ag labor be included in an immigration reform package.
We expect something will happen in the month of June. It may be in the third week of June, but we don't yet know what a package is going to look like, and we are trying feverishly to make sure that if there is some new vehicle that is going to get voted on and passed, that it addresses at least some aspects of agricultural labor.
The target date has been set for the Senate Farm Bill introduction. Senate Ag Committee Chair Pat Roberts has set a day for introducing the Senate Farm Bill, with full debate to take place the following week. A Feedstuffs.com article says Roberts made the announcement at a Farm Bill forum in his home state alongside Ag Secretary Sonny Perdue and fellow Kansas Senator Jerry Morin. Roberts says he has a clear path to bringing the bill to the floor of the Senate, as Minority Leader Chuck Schumer has promised he won't file cloture on the bill, a potential hurdle that could delay consideration. Roberts did reiterate that the House version of the Farm Bill wouldn't pass in the Senate because he'll need 60 votes to avoid a filibuster. The House version, which hasn't passed yet, is still relying solely on Republican votes to get through the chamber. Roberts also said the Senate version won't be proposing any major changes to SNAP, but could possibly look into some efficiencies we can make as to how that program is run. He also mentioned that the Senate bill will fix the ARC program to some degree. The second Smithfield trial is underway in North Carolina. A second lawsuit against Smithfield Foods began this week in a federal court located in Raleigh, North Carolina. It's the second trial involving claims from local residents that a hog farm contracted with Smithfield uses an inadequate waste disposal system. The residents claim that the inadequate system undermines their quality of life. Lawyers will argue over whether Smithfield should be held liable for damages from storing waste from 4,700 hogs in open-air lagoons and spraying it onto farm fields as fertilizer. The trial stems from dozens of cases filed against Smithfield, the world's biggest pork producer, on the grounds that hog farms using the lagoon and spray model make life miserable for nearby residents. Noxious fumes, carcass-laden trucks, and swarms of flies associated with industrial-scale hog production are all things that residents are giving as reasons behind the suit. Hog farming is big business and a pillar of the state's economy. The first trial was held in April when a jury awarded the plaintiffs $50 million, although the judge reduced it to $2.5 million in punitive damages. Kenneth Smith, Smithfield president, says if the lawsuits succeed, the company will have to revisit whether we can continue doing business in North Carolina. That's all the time we have on the Farm Show this morning. Reporting for WSMI, this has been Jamie Geisler.